and welcome to the Development Podcast, coming to you from the World Bank in the United States and all around the world. I'm Raka Banerjee alongside Paul Blake.
Today, the unique impacts and threats faced by women and girls during the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, it turns out actually that the pandemic is not gender neutral, as I would say. It actually has differential impacts on men and on women and on boys and girls.
We get the latest from the World Bank's gender team as they explore the numbers from the front lines of the crisis.
All that and more over the next few minutes. But first, Raka, let's dive into the data.
As I've been looking into the data on, you know, gender and COVID-19, one thing that's been really good to see is that the public conversation about coronavirus has actually been pretty gender sensitive. You know, I've seen articles in a lot of major newspapers talking about how women are being squeezed by this pandemic, you know, the differential impact for women relative to men in terms of economic impacts, health, you know, a lot of different areas.
Yeah. And, you know, as you'll hear in the interview that's coming up with the World Bank's Karen Grohn, she mentions an article in The Washington Post that I still need to go read, talking about the economic impact on women.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's one of the ones I've read. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, yeah. So based on your research, you've been reading a lot about this. What are some of the data points that our listeners, that myself should be aware of when it comes to the gendered aspects of the coronavirus pandemic?
So, you know, in terms of just pure mortality rates.
And that's just to be clear, mortality rates, that's like the rate at which people are dying from the disease.
Exactly. Yeah. So reporting in the news, you know, from China, from Spain, Italy, it's all finding that men are dying at higher rates than women from coronavirus. But on the other hand, we're seeing that women are actually the ones who are being disproportionately exposed to COVID-19 because they are the ones who are much more represented in the frontline caregiving professions, you know, nurses, physician's assistants, care workers.
So just to put an underline under that, the early research showing mortality rates higher for men, but women are being basically exposed or have the potential to be exposed at much higher rates than men.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So give me a little bit more about what that sort of breakdown looks like. Explain that a little bit more.
Yeah. So, you know, for this, I was looking at data from the International Labor Organization, the ILO, and it turns out that the percentage of personal care workers globally that are women, it's 88%. You know, so it's the vast majority of personal care workers are women. And that's true all around the world. And a working paper from the World Health Organization, this came out last year, it's called Gender Equity in the Health Workforce, found that in most regions of the world, its physicians tend to be male, while nurses tend to be female. And those numbers are as high as, you know, 86% of nurses in the Americas. So it's really women who are the ones that are most directly exposed to the virus because they're the ones caring directly for the people that fall ill.
You know, as you say all that, I'm kind of in my head, I'm thinking maybe I've been, you know, haven't been reading the right articles or I've had my head under a rock, but I didn't realize the scale of that difference, you know, in those industries. Those are just sort of stunning stats about the differences in jobs and thus exposure, potential exposure to the virus.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. It's amazing. Tell me a little bit about what you found in terms of the economic impacts. Are women faring better than men or vice versa during the pandemic?
So again, it really comes down to male versus female representation in the industries that are being hit hardest by the pandemic. So in the US, for example, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, women accounted for 55% of the jobs lost last month. So basically the majority of unemployment last month.
Do you know sort of what explains that disparity?
Yeah. So, you know, I read this, a recent World Bank report called Gender Dimensions of the COVID-19 Pandemic, and it's pointing to some of the female-dominated industries that are the ones most likely to be adversely affected long-term.
So can you give me a couple of those?
Yeah. So there's retail, there's leisure and travel, there's hospitality, and also textile and garment manufacturing. So for example, half of all employed women in Bangladesh work in the garment industry. And in Germany, women are twice as likely as men to work in retail. And they're actually four times as likely as men to work in pharmacies.
So hold on, forgive me. Explain why these are sort of adversely affected. It's not quite obvious to me. I mean, I get that retail, you know, because shops are closed, there's lockdowns, people aren't out shopping, but textiles and pharmacies, forgive me again, but like, can you explain those a little bit more? Why are those so effective?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's basically that those are jobs that you really have to be there in person, right? They're not really suited for telecommuting. So women are basically faced with a lose-lose proposition. Either they work and risk exposing themselves to the virus, or they lose their livelihoods, their source of income.
Yeah, that's pretty sobering. I mean, it's kind of clear that the reach of this disease goes beyond just the direct health impacts of it. It's not just, you know, the fact that you could get sick from it. It's that it's affecting people's kind of wallets and their bottom
line. Exactly.
Lines.
So, you know, can I afford to put food on the table, you know, for my family because I can't go to work because of the virus?
Exactly. I mean, besides health and kind of economics or you know, the personal finance, are there other ways that the disease and the response to the disease are impacting women differently than men? And, you know, are there any kind of other topical ways that that's happening that we should know about?
Yeah, I mean, one last area of particularly grave concern to women is intimate partner violence.
So, well, hang on, can we just explain that? My understanding, I've seen sort of headlines about that. That's kind of a technical term, but that's my understanding is it's when a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, or wife, or other person that you might have an intimate relationship with engages in sort of abuse or aggression towards you.
Yeah,
is that right?
Exactly. I mean, it's basically, you know, domestic abuse, domestic violence. And these numbers are actually generally alarming even without a pandemic. So according to data that I found from UN Women, in the last 12 months, this is sort of going back before coronavirus and its impacts, nearly 250 million women globally experienced intimate partner violence. So
wow.
Those numbers are already really high. And now, given that half the world is on lockdown, we're already seeing data that shows that this violence is intensifying. And what's worse is that the expectation is that it's only going to continue to increase during the pandemic. You know, in many countries, we're seeing numbers from France, Cyprus, Singapore, Argentina. What we're finding is that reports of domestic violence and calls to, you know, domestic violence helplines have already increased by around 30%. And that's as of last month.
Wow. That's super heartbreaking. You know, I mean, as you tell me all that, it's really kind of depressing. I'm reminding myself though, that it's a fortunate thing that this data is out there. And that means, you know, it can be studied and people are out there looking for solutions and they're trying to shine a light on it. So thank you so much for sort of pulling all this together and giving us some insight into that and the other sort of gender disparities that are emerging from the pandemic.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Well, let's learn more about how the coronavirus pandemic poses a unique set of risks to women and girls' health, well-being, and livelihoods. And to do that, Paul recently spoke to Karen Grohn, the World Bank's Global Director for Gender.
Well, let's jump right into it. I've got a big question for you. Some might be wondering, people who are tuning into this, they might be wondering why the need to consider the impact of this virus, the pandemic, on women and girls as a distinct issue, a distinct question, separate to the population as a whole.
It actually has differential impacts on men and on women and on boys and girls as a result of a number of factors in terms of their biology and physiology, but also because of their social and economic roles in the different societies in which they live. But there's another set of issues in the health sector that I think are really important, which is that, well, two sets of issues. The first is that more women than men around the world are in the front lines of the healthcare profession, as nurses, as physician assistants, as other frontline workers. In some countries, it's as high as 85 to 90%. Pandemics and crises put tremendous pressure on systems, and it means that services are stretched and capacity may be really thin.
The very next question I wanted to ask you about was that education angle. You know, the bank has worked at securing access to schooling for girls, and we've seen a huge improvement in that over recent years. Are you concerned that this pandemic could, you know, somehow reverse that process, you know, that progress? And how could that, you know, what would that look like, that reversal? And then I would just add one more thing to that, which is how can, you know, governments and institutions respond to that?
In previous crises, what we've learned from Ebola or SARS or H1N1 is that sometimes girls don't return to school. School closures and economic necessity can lead boys and girls to drop out. And depending on what they do, the experience from previous crises is that boys go back quicker and some girls just don't return, either because they're in the labor market or because they have caregiving responsibilities. In many countries, there's a digital divide where boys have greater access to the internet. They might actually monopolize the one computer that's in a poor household's home. And if that's the case, it means that boys may be prioritized over girls in terms of having greater access to learning materials. So it means that girls may actually fall behind in terms of learning opportunities and learning outcomes.
You were talking about the economics of this and how the pandemic, as it potentially pushes the world into recession, how that can particularly affect women. Could you just pick up where you left off?
Because of where women are placed in the economy relative to men, there may be greater differential impacts on women than on men. And I was just noting that in the U.S., the headline of a recent Washington Post article was that we should name this a she-cession as opposed to a recession. And the reason they say that is because the jobs in the sectors where women predominate are the ones that are first and hardest hit. So what this means is not just higher unemployment, but lack of income and ability to cope. The other thing about the labor force that I think is really important is that around the world, women predominate in informal employment. These are the types of jobs that don't come with fringe benefits like social protection and health insurance and unemployment compensation. And a solution, which I know we'll come to, is to really think about how we extend social protection programs, particularly cash transfers, to those groups of workers. And there's two final things I would say. Agriculture is a very feminized sector, and agriculture is also hit very hard right now. There are big disruptions in market conditions and supply chains, and it's really important that we keep the food supply moving. But it's very difficult in these conditions, and that affects female smallholders relative to others because they have fewer resources to help them cope in terms of harvesting, in terms of hiring labor, other kinds of things that are really critical. And in potentially impacting food security. And the final thing that I think is the invisible part, although I think it's very visible right now, invisible because it's not counted, is in the increased demands for caregiving as a result of one, job loss, as a result of school closures, as a result of just taking care of the enormous number of people who are sick and require care. And there's one other pandemic that we see that existed before the crisis and has been exacerbated by this crisis. And that is the increases in intimate partner violence around the world. Shutdowns, lockdowns, lack of mobility mean that people are indoors in cramped conditions. There can be stress. People don't necessarily have conflict management skills. And in the countries that UN Women and the WHO and the bank have been tracking, we actually see increases to those helplines and to those services that are still going, increases in calls from women. And the increases in calls, and these are largely women as opposed to men, can have spiked by anywhere from 30 to 60% from before the pandemic. So already we know that gender-based violence, intimate partner violence, affects 1 in 3 women around the world.
I wanted to turn to solutions now, and you've talked a little bit about them on a kind of topic-by-topic basis so far, but I was wondering if you could just kind of give us a broader overview, you know, if governments, if institutions are coming to you for advice, what sort of solutions should they be looking at? What sort of response should they be looking at to try to head off some of these concerns that you've been raising over the past few minutes?
So the first is saving lives. You know, that's really critical. We need to save lives. We need to take all of the social distancing measures. But part of that also means that we need to pay attention to females as the frontline caregivers. We need to reduce their risk of exposure by ensuring that they have the right equipment and the right resources. We need to ensure that women can access health services, and we need to ensure that certain services just are essential and keep going. The second response is really protecting the poor and protecting those who are most vulnerable. It's not just the cash transfers, it's also figuring out how we can help people preserve their jobs and their livelihoods and can, in a sense, rebuild back better. So how do we build back better? It's strengthening the systems, the social protection systems. It's strengthening the financial system. And the checks and balances and ensuring liquidity, better bankruptcy regulations, for instance. It's building back better in the sense of having a stronger framework for care, the caregiving that I mentioned, whether it's at the community level or whether it's what employers provide or whether it's what the government subsidizes. These are just essential.
Well, Karen, this has been really interesting. Thank you so much for taking your time. I know you got a really busy schedule, so we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
So Rocco, what did you think of the interview with Karen?
I mean, I think Karen is always just such an eloquent voice in talking about these issues of gender and women's rights. And, you know, especially now when we're seeing such gendered elements to this COVID crisis. You know, and I was particularly struck by the bit about women predominating in informal employment. And so they just don't have access to the kind of benefits that people do in the formal sector, like paid leave or other things that have been really important for helping people get through this crisis. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so important that we figure out how to get those and other benefits to women in the informal sector so that we can build back better from the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I found that stat about more women being on the front lines of the healthcare battle and thus, you know, more likely to get infected. I just found that stunning. And I've been kind of thinking about, like, why did I find that so stunning? You know, it seems kind of obvious, but I really hadn't, like, thought about it before that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it seems obvious now. A lot of these things seem obvious now, but there's just so much data, so much information coming out of the crisis that it's really easy to miss things that are just right under your nose.
Definitely, definitely. And thank you for making me feel a little bit better about that.
Of course.
But anyway, I think that's it for this edition of the Development Podcast. A huge thanks to all of you who are out there listening. If this is the first episode of the Development Podcast you've listened to, we hope you liked it. Welcome. And we hope you'll subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever your favorite platform is.
Yes, please subscribe. And whether this is your first episode or you're a regular listener, we would love your feedback and your questions. So please email us at thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
But in the meantime, everyone out there, stay healthy, stay safe. We'll see you back here again soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye.